हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Sri Govinda Bhasya, page 78. Siddhanta, because the soul is conscious itself, therefore it is conscious. Why is that? The sutra explains. It is, quote, it is called that because that is its essential nature. Right? So the soul is conscious because it is conscious. Right? It's not conscious because there's something else there. Like, matter seems conscious, right? Because something else is there. Does that make sense? The body seems conscious. Right? Why? Because the soul's there. You know, it's active because the vital air is there. Does that make sense? So there's something else there, but the soul's conscious because the soul's conscious. Right? I mean, it worked for iPhone.
I want your permission, if I can ask you one last final question to conclude my chapter on the last book.
On the Babaji's of Radhakund. Okay.
Yeah. Maharaj, if for a moment, if we assume that all these Raga Mantras and the Siddha Pranayas are true, then is it that we will lack something?
If we take it that they are true, will we lack something? One, why is there an option that they're true? And second, if you come to the platform of bhava and you're associating with Krishna's eternal associates, what's going to be lacking? Right? Anything's lacking?
No.
No. So then what's the point? See, this is just their sales pitch. This is what makes them unique, is that, oh, we have this, you guys don't have this. Yes, we do. We have it later. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's the whole point, is that it's not real, because there's no such thing as that by being told this, then you can function on that platform. Like we mentioned, you know, the little girl is there. You can tell her, okay, in the future you're going to marry this boy. Does that mean that now she can function as a married woman? No, she needs training, she'll grow up, all these different things.
Yeah.
In this sutra, the word guna, quality, refers to the soul's quality of consciousness. And the word sara means the essential nature of the thing, the absence of which makes the thing non-existent. Right? Because if there's no consciousness, there's no soul. Right? When the body's not conscious, the soul's not there. Right? The word Pragyavat means, like Lord Vishnu is known as Pragya, all knowing, because he is all knowledge. Oh, that's how we got into this. Okay, so now here we are. Because he is all knowledge personified, Lord Vishnu is said to know everything. In the same way, because the soul is consciousness personified, therefore the soul is conscious. Right? But he knows everything, and the soul is conscious of their field. That the statements, quote, the soul is conscious personified, and, quote, the soul is conscious, quote, end quote, mean the same thing is also confirmed in the next sutra, Bhagavatam, first reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28-36. Whatever apparently duality is perceived in the self is simply the confusion of the mind. Indeed, such supposed duality has no basis to rest upon apart from one's own soul. Footnote 46. The BBT purport explains, as explained in verse 33 of this chapter. The eternal self is neither assumed nor lost, since every living entity is an eternal reality. The word vikalpa, or duality, here refers to the mistaken idea that the spirit soul is partially composed of matter in the form of the gross body or subtle mind. Right, so here then they even have the philosophical point. Okay, well, they're partly there, because the body is the soul, so that means the soul has to be mixed with the material matter to produce the body. Right? Yeah. It is thus that foolish persons consider the material body or mind to be an intrinsic or fundamental component of the self. In fact, the living entity is pure spirit without any tinge of matter. Consequently, the false ego, which is generated by the false identification with matter, is a mistaken identity imposed upon the pure spirit soul. Right, so, when you come into the material world, the false ego, you know, that quality is then forced upon the living entity. Because they want to enjoy, so then you have to have a specific identity to enjoy something. So then you're given that. Does that make sense? The modes of nature will give that. And depending upon your previous karmas, then you will have, particular combination. Right? And if not, if you're the first time around, then you'll be Lord Brahma. Right? Does that make sense? The sense of ego, or I am, in other words, the sense of one's individual identity, comes from the spirit soul, because there's no other possible basis for such self-awareness. Like, the body doesn't seem to worry about it. By studying one's false sense of ego, one can analytically understand that there is a pure ego, which is expressed by the words, Aham Brahmasmi, I am pure spirit soul. One can easily understand in a similar way that there is a supreme spirit soul, the personality of Godhead, who is the omniscient controller of everything. Such understanding in Krishna consciousness constitutes perfect knowledge, as described here by the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:28-36. So this is the unrestricted Vedanta Sutta, chapter 2, part 3.
That's not me.
Unrestricted. So is there also a restricted one? I see. Let the Vedanta Sutra be free. Okay. Sutra 2:328. Yavad atma bhavit vach chana doshas tad darshanat. Yavad, as long as atmarama of the soul, bhavit vat, because of existence, cha, and na, not, doshaha, fault, tat, of that, darshanat, because of the sight. It is not a fault that the jiva is both conscious and consciousness itself, since these exist with the jiva eternally. This is seen in the case of the sun also, which is both light and illuminator. Sutta Prakashika. The Sutrakar clarifies that the statements, quote, the jiva is consciousness personified, and, quote, the jiva is consciousness, means the same, and hence the statements are not non-dual. In truth, the jiva and consciousness are inseparable coupling, wherein the consciousness adds uniqueness to the jiva. Right? So the jiva is unique because matter is not conscious. Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta. It is not a fault, na doshaha, that the jiva, who is consciousness itself, is also designated as being conscious. Why? Because they're saying, oh, he can't be both. Right? Why? It is not contrary, because it is seen that the condition of being both conscious and consciousness coexist with Atma as long as it exists. Yavad Atma Bhavit Vat. It is acknowledged that the Atma exists without beginning or end in time. This is understood from seeing, Tad Darshanat, that the sun, though a form of light, gives off light. Similarly, the Atma, a form of consciousness, is also conscious. As long as the sun exists, these designations as light and illuminator are to be given. The wise say that though there is one object, there is an appearance of it being two objects because of the principle of visesha. Right? Visesha means uniqueness. That's why I mentioned before. That's its uniqueness. Right? Because something has existence, right? You have to have the existence itself, that it's there. You have to have the uniqueness, right? You have to have the activity it can perform, the action, and you have to have the purpose. That then you have an object. Right? Otherwise, you don't. Right? Does that make sense? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur expounds on the nature of soul. Vichara, ragao, chaitana, dharmao, sorupa, pravritti, bhavata. The conscious spirit soul possesses thinking and loving, for these two are parts of their nature. Thinking creates knowledge, therefore knowledge is part of the soul's nature. Loving creates bliss, therefore bliss is part of the soul's nature. These are part of the soul's nature. Right, so Satchitananda. So you think, and so that creates knowledge, chit, and then that application creates ananda. No?
Yeah.
In the Shruti Shastra it is said, Satyam Jnanam Anandam. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss are part of the soul's nature. In the Vedanta Sutra 413 it is said, Atmeti Tvava Gachanti Grahyanti Cheti. The wise know and teach the science of the soul. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.7.19, Sri Prahlad declares, Atma refers to the Supreme Lord or the living entities. Both of them are spiritual, free from birth and death, free from deterioration, and free from material contamination. They are individual, they are knowers of the external body, and they are the foundation or shelter of everything. They are free from material change. They are self-illuminated. They are the cause of all causes. And they are all-pervading. They have nothing to do with the material body, and therefore they are always uncovered. In the Vishnu Purana, Sri Prahlad declares, Ya pritir avivekanam vishayesh vanapayini tvam anu smaratas sa me hridayan napa sarpatu. Fools fall in love with what the material senses see. I am not like them. O Supreme Lord, I have fallen in love with you. I always think of you. I pray that you will never leave my heart. Right, so what is seen, the external, that one, then there's a problem. So what's the actual, the transcendental position? That's then what one should be attracted to. Right? It says, wise know the soul, teach about the soul. In Bhagavad Gita 2:24, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Achejo yam adahyo yam akledyo shoshya evacha nitya sarva gatastanur achalo yam sanatanaha. The individual soul is unbreakable and soluble and can be neither burnt nor dried. He is all-pervading. He is everlasting, all-pervading, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10, so that makes the point is that it's just covering. It doesn't change the soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:1, 91, 92, Vasudev says, having experienced the situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering its present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under this same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. At the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of the body are due to the flickering of the mind, for otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. Right? So we see in both these cases, the gross, the subtle, and then the next body, it's all happening because of the mind. Right? The mind, then you see a situation, you contemplate that, and then you see if that's something of value. If so, you surrender to that. It doesn't have anything to do with the body. Right? The body goes along with it. You might consider, but it's the mind making the decision, right? And then in the dreams, then you have, you know, so many things that the mind does with the body or whatever body, and then at the time of death, whatever you're thinking of, that will generate the next body, right? Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We know that the soul is Satchitananda, but we don't function on that level. We covered. And in the Gita, it is mentioned that all the soul does is desires.
Mm-hmm.
So, something is that once we desire it, and then the whole, you know, we had a wrong desire, and then the whole chain reaction happens, still we remain Satchitananda.
Yes.
So how can we match those?
But it's covered. It's just like the gold ring is covered by mud. It's still a gold ring, but it's going to act like mud. Right? If you have a gold ring, it looks very nice, shiny, looks very nice on your finger. If you touch your cloth, nothing happens. But when it's covered with mud, then there's no shininess. It touches your cloth, it makes a stain, this or that. It acts like that. So it's just a matter of uncovering. And so the desiring means, but why are we desiring? What is it that we think? Okay, you have, let's say, you take a moment where you actually really appreciate something,
yeah.
Right? So now that moment of appreciation, there's that idea that there's the eternality, right? Means that feeling, you have that, you touch eternity,
yeah.
Right? And you think this will create happiness.
Yes.
Right? So now what do? By that desire to continue that, you act, right, to continue that feeling.
Yes.
Though it goes away. Yeah. You understand? So we're still only acting because of the nature of the soul. We're still aware of these things because the soul is conscious.
Yeah.
So it nothing's happening that's not because of the nature of the soul. The basis is always the soul. But because the soul identifies with the external body and the situations and the goals and the activities and, you know, all these things, then they're entangled in that. They have to function within that. Because if you want something, you have to function within that. Just like you want to go to Calcutta, you have to be situated in the bus. Right? Unless you can catch a ride with that guy yesterday on the helicopter. But, you know.
That was the minister.
Oh, that was the minister. Okay.
Textile
minister. Yes, minister. Does that make sense? So the function is still going on that, so that's why there's the illusion. Because the soul is thinking that it's acting in its natural position, but it's not. It's acting in this external. And so it has to be within this external to get these external desires that it thinks will actually make it happy. But that's the point. They can't, because the soul is not the body. The soul is Satchitananda. Right? Is conscious. But due to wanting to enjoy Krishna's energy separate from Krishna, therefore then we're giving this situation where we can deal with the external unconscious energy. Right? And because it's unconscious, it appears to do what we like. Right? You know, it's just like the card seems to do what you like, the family doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, because they're conscious. Right, so you can imagine how means here we're frustrated with material desire, but at least we think we can control and enjoy. Imagine the spiritual world where we want to control and enjoy, and nothing will cooperate with us. Even the rice is conscious, you know, and doesn't want to be cooked for mundane purposes. You understand? So it's just not going to happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the soul is acting as soul. But the point is in illusion, it's applying that nature of the soul not towards the Supreme Soul. Right? The soul being Brahman is not applying its consciousness towards Brahman. It's applying it towards the external nature. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why it's still the same. So you can see it covering. So the example of the ring is quite appropriate. Because
mm-hmm.
It's still the same.
Yeah.
Why would you pick up the ring and wash off the mud?
It's valuable.
Because of the gold, right? Not because of the mud.
No.
It's not that, wow, this mud is fabulous mud. And then, you know, very carefully get a little dish and wash with as minimal amount of water, then let it sit, pour off the water, and then you have the mud, and then you put it on your face and all that. In the meantime, you've thrown away the ring. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's the The whole point is the basis is still the soul. And because the dead matter won't, and the soul can only relate to the Supreme Soul. It can't relate to matter. So the Lord then entering this matter, you know, I mean, the matter is his energy. And then through those potencies, he animates the matter. He gives the vital force, he gives the potencies that make everything work and give them their uniqueness, right? That visesha aspect.
Yeah.
And so because of that, then we are interacting with the Lord. But we think it's not the Lord. Like Prahlad Maharaj says, fools, they think what they're seeing is the valuable thing. No, it's the Lord that's valuable. So he just sees the Lord. But the fools, they just see the external aspects. So,
yeah.
So, the living entity is never not with the Lord, never not interacting with the Lord. But the illusion, right? What is that? What's the word? Starts with a B.
Vivarta,
yes. The Vivarta, the illusion is, they're dealing that the external energy is the thing that's alive and moving and giving value. But it's the Lord. Does that make sense? So even if it's, say, you're interacting with another living entity, but they still are thinking it's the body. Your thing is their body, they're thinking your body. So it's just the interaction or relationship with the bodies. The souls are actually interacting with the Lord. So it's only devotees actually understand the soul, so devotees can actually interact with the other devotees, with the other souls. But non-devotees never do that. They always interact with the Lord. They don't even see the soul, because they don't even know who they are as the soul. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. So that visesha, that's the Lord. And then the Lord, the living entity, then has that has the being part of the Lord. Then he is conscious of everything. We can be conscious of our field, right? And that's all the more we have to be, because the point is the Lord interacts with the living entity within their field, because his field is all the fields. Right, so he interacts with the devotee because they're the ashray, right, in the area of their field. Does that make sense? Like Mother Yashoda, her field of parental dealings, Krishna functions within that. That's where the rasa happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a problem that we ourselves aren't deal with an unlimited field. We don't have to. Within our field, the unlimited deals with us. So there's never any lack. You don't have any shortage. Does that make sense? There's never something missing. It's always the soul. It's always Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's all that's going on. So when you're dealing, that's why we say Omkara is the basis. Because Omkara means A-U-M. So that's the whole function.
Maharaj, in regards to Prabhu's question, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions the point in Jaiva Dharma that Maya has two features, Guna and Avidya. So Guna potency creates the material world, and Avidya potency is able to make the spirits world compatible in this matter. So
Guna is the material world and
Avidya feature. She makes the spirits world compatible with matter. Therefore,
compatible with matter.
So he's able to function then in the material. Otherwise, it's impossible for the spirit soul to be in the material world. It can't function.
Yes. Guna and?
Avidya.
Yeah, because by ignorance, that's how he's able to deal. The living entity can deal in the material world because they think that they can. Right? It's something important. So due to ignorance, they don't think I'm the soul. They think that they are matter. And so they function in matter. Because if you know you're the soul, why would you function in matter? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
in the Kathopanishad, footnote.
In the Kathopanishad 2.3.10 and 2.3.6, it is said, Yada pancha vatishtante yanani manasa saha bhurischa va na vishe shtati tam ahu paramam gatim. When the five senses are peaceful, and when the mind and intelligence do not strive for material things, one attains the highest goal of life. This the wise say. Indriyanam pritagbhavam udayas tamayo tamayau chayat pritag ut padya mananam matva dhiro nashochati. In the course of life, the senses rise and again they set. Aware that he, the soul, is different from the senses, a wise person does not grieve. Tattva Sutra 2.16. Yeah. So the senses, they interact with the sense object by the Lord's potency and all that. And we, being conscious, are able to appreciate that. But the point is not being that, we don't have to be disturbed by it. Right? So when we have nothing to gain by it, that's the first one, that the senses are peaceful. And the second one is we can see them acting, because then we'll take it they're peaceful, and so they're doing nothing. So then we'll think of yoga and just sitting there. But the point is okay, that works in there. Or the jnani doing nothing. But here the point is the senses act, they interact with the material nature, because that's what they're from. So material nature interacting with material nature, what's the problem? So knowing that, we don't get disturbed on whether that interaction is good or not good. Does that make sense? Okay. So we're on Bhagavatam verse reference. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.7.5. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness. Either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? Sutra 2.3.29. Right, so then it comes out, at no time is he not conscious. So that's the point. So how does he become engaged in nescience? Right, he's covered by that avidya. But so therefore, through avidya, his consciousness is perceiving. That therefore the illusion. You know, it's just like you have light and then you have some colored material. It'll go through that material and then all the light on that side will be the color of that material. So like that, that's how so he's conscious. Sutta 2.3.29, Purvapaksha. So then the doubt. Is it not true that consciousness is born from the modes of material nature? Is it not true that, because it does not exist in the state of dreamless sleep, consciousness is not eternal? Is it not true that even when the living entity is fully awake, his consciousness is in fact created by a barrage of various sense objects? Okay. So, the sutrakar replies in the next sutra. So, no. Pumstva divat Tvasya sato bhi vakti yogat. Pumstva, virility, adi, beginning with, vat, like, tu, vat, asya, of him, sata, of the existing, abhi vakti yogat, because of manifestation. You cannot say that the jiva's consciousness is not eternal, because it exists during deep sleep and simply manifests on waking. It is like maleness, which is unmanifest in a child, but appears when he grows up. Sutra Prakashika. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, if you're not conscious, there is no consciousness, then you would only be, when you wake up, you would only be aware of before you went to sleep. Right? But when you wake up, someone can ask you, how did you sleep? And you can say, that means you are conscious.
Actually, the famous example, I slept so well, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, I slept so well, I don't remember anything. Yeah. But you were aware that you slept so well and don't remember anything. Yeah. Yeah, that's the funny thing. You don't think of that so much from the modern context, but that's actually good sleep when you sleep and don't remember anything. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar elucidates that consciousness is unmanifested during deep sleep and manifests on waking. Since the jiva during deep sleep is single and has no other separate object of knowledge, consciousness becomes unmanifest. The Sutrakar, in his future work, in Vedanta Sutra 3.29, Saeva tu karmanu smriti shabda vidibhya, confirms that the same jiva awakens from deep sleep and manifests consciousness because he must resume unfinished karmas due to the remembrance of his previous identity. The scriptures testify this. Footnote 48. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains that the jiva's nature is indestructible. Some people may speak in this way about the soul's nature. Quote, the individual spirit soul is seen in the world.
In the world.
Oh, seen in the word I. In the dreamless state, that individual identity, that I, is destroyed. End quote. However, this false idea is refuted by the Shruti Shastra, which affirms the soul's continued individual existence, even during dreamless sleep. In the Shruti Shastra is said, I slept happily, I did not dream.
I don't understand on what ground they claim that this consciousness is destroyed in deep sleep.
Because you're not conscious. That's what they're trying to say. But it doesn't mean that the consciousness itself is not there, it's just not manifest. Just as we see, he gives the example of in the child, you don't see the maleness. But when they grow up, then you see the maleness. Does that make sense?
They give that example, or we...
No, we're giving that example. They're simply saying, what they're saying is all these ones before. You know, it's not true that consciousness is born from the modes of material nature. Because we'll point that one's consciousness will be filtered through that, but they're taking it that that is the consciousness, the modes. Right? Because of your desire, you're conscious, therefore the modes, certain modes act, so you have those certain false identities. Through that, then you act. So then they will take it that that is actually where consciousness is from. But why would that be there if you weren't conscious? Right? The modes of nature are all happening, the rag is just sitting there. Right? But it's because of our desire, therefore it happens. Does that make sense? So unless you're conscious, it won't happen. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is consciousness is there before. Mm-hmm. But they're just seeing these external things. Because if you want to take your, if you want to take pradhan as the main thing, then at some point, and it's unconscious, therefore at some point then the soul has to become unconscious. But then the problem is that the soul's unconscious, it doesn't exist. So then what's the point of merging into pradhan, or merging into brahman, or merging into, you know, nirvana, or like this? Because then if there's no individual consciousness, you don't exist. So then how would you be happy? Because if brahman's already happy now and you're not there, then what's the difference? So what's the point of you? No, but you don't exist. Because you're not conscious. See, that's the whole problem, is that they're not intelligent enough to understand they're getting rid of themselves. That's why we say spiritual suicide.
It's because of avidya.
Yeah, because of avidya. That avidya is there before pradhan. That's the whole thing. Then someone in that, they're put into the material energy. Right? Because the material energy comes out. Now, when you have pradhan, means the living entity, due to ignorance, avidya, then they think I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that concept, I'm controller and enjoyer, can that match with pradhan? Right? Nothing's there. Nothing's happening.
Mm.
No. Now, when we come out to avyakta, still nothing happening.
Mm.
Right? Because the Lord has to enter it and bring everything together. Now, once things are together, now are there things to control and enjoy?
Mm.
So that's called, that's the Mahatattva.
Yes.
So that's why it's also called Sutra.
Because
the desire to enjoy.
Yeah.
Right? So now you have a match. Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily made in heaven, but it's a match. Is that so? Then you're allotted according to your particular identity. I mean, you know, way that you want to control and enjoy. Then you're controlled by a certain combination of false ego in the three modes. Right? So that's why it always mentions false ego, and then you understand it has the three modes, or it just mentions the three modes, and it's coming to you through the false ego. Right? Does that make sense? You know, this program coming to you from, you know, or through, like that. Yes, like that. So that's the whole, that's why it works. Right? So you can mention one or the other. Or, you know, if they're being they'll mention both. But you don't have to. Because if you say the modes, it means those three kinds of false ego. If you say false ego, it's going to manifest through those three modes. Right? Otherwise, it's going to be too far back. Because it is there behind. So that Karana Sharira is already there. But you can't manifest. You know, just like in deep sleep, you can't manifest the consciousness, though it's there. You can't manifest something from nothing. That's the illusion. Right? That's why magicians are, you know, appreciated. Because it appears they manifest something from nothing. But there's always something there. So,
and is it that when we speak about this particular spiritual suicide, they want to change their position from being spirit to matter?
No, it's just they're changing it from existing to not existing. Otherwise, why is it suicide? Otherwise, it'd just be transformation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't exist. That's the whole thing.
So, strictly speaking, the happiness of non-existence, it's a phantasmagoria.
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
There's nothing to experience it. So how can
There's nothing there to experience it. There's nothing to experience, and there's nothing there to experience it. So the idea that you'll be happy in that position, why would you think that?
But you can say that you are happy after you slept well, deep sleep.
Yes, because you're conscious.
Yeah, so you want to be unconscious after that to experience.
No, but they're getting rid of their existence. They don't exist if you merge into Brahman or Nirvan. Nirvan just means, it's like they give the example of blowing out a candle. There's just nothing.
The candle?
No, that they're talking about the flame part. They forget that there's a candle and making all that. They kind of finesse that part. But that's the whole point. There's no such thing as this Buddhistic philosophy. And that's been transformed into the, you know, the Mayavad philosophy. And these others is that they're doing the same thing, but that's merging into the material energy, into the pradhan. So that it just doesn't exist. There's no existence of these philosophies. But due to illusion, then they have those. Does that make sense? You know, it's just it'll also be still the modes of nature. Right? It's like that. So just they come up. So Krishna, he himself then gives these philosophies to them. And then they're interested, so he gives them that faith. And then they're committed, and then they function in that way. Just like in Gita, someone's interested in material desires, they approach the demigods. Krishna himself gives them the faith to do that. Because otherwise, how the demigods themselves have no potency separate from Krishna. So that's the whole idea, is that there isn't anything separate. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Siddhanta. The word tu indicates refutation of the doubt. The word na is understood from the previous sutra. You say that consciousness is absent during deep sleep and is created on awakening. The answer is no. Why? Because the consciousness, asya, exists, sata, during deep sleep and simply manifests on awaking. Abhi vyakti yoga. An example is given. It is like being a man. Pum sav tavivat. Though maleness is present with the jiva during childhood, it manifests only during adolescence. The objection concerning consciousness during deep sleep is refuted by Shruti. Concerning deep sleep, it is said in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:3:30. Quote, when the jiva who is conscious is not conscious in deep sleep, he does not know the object of knowledge. The knower is never separate from consciousness, since that is indestructible. But at that time, there is no second object other than himself which he can know. Right, so that's why it's called deep sleep, because there's nothing else other than themselves. So therefore, there's no way the consciousness is not manifest. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's deep sleep. Now, in dreaming, then there's subtle other objects, and then in wakefulness, then there's the external objects. Right. So in deep sleep, all there is the jiva. And so he there's nothing to perceive, therefore it's sleep, deep sleep. So
nowadays it's interesting that the scientists, they did the research on sleep and everything, and they said that the deep sleep, it's what most important in your sleep.
Yes.
So that what actually gives you all the energy for the rest of the day.
Yes, yes. I think, I'm not sure, is it Manu or... And some other places where it's mentioned, because the soul goes and is merges into the Lord. He's still an individual, right?
It goes back into Brahman.
Yeah, and so that from there, then that's why he's rejuvenated.
Yeah.
So when you're dreaming, then you don't get to that state.
And the average time for like a healthy person is between 1 hour, 30 minutes, and up to 2 hours max.
Of deep sleep?
Yeah. They have
this in how many hours?
You know, it's 6, 7, even 8 hours.
People, that's the maximum you'll get. Yeah. So probably 8 hours, okay.
They have that smart watch.
Oh, okay.
It actually gives you the info.
I reckon they can tell.
Very. Very frustrated.
Very frustrated. So how much are you getting off of your smartwatch?
Oh, I don't have a smartwatch.
And your funny little thing?
1 hour.
1 hour?
1:45, that's the maximum you'll get.
Okay.
I can see myself. No, but kids get more. 2.5 hours, sometimes 3.
2.5, 3.
Because their mind is more peaceful. I mean, no worries. Like deep ones we have.
In other words, they only have to worry about lunch, but lunch is going to happen. You're the one that has to actually worry about it. So. So that's what you see, could appreciate why it mentions that the Paramahamsa, they move around like a restless child.
Yeah.
Because there's no material desire.
Dandamaraj also has 2.5 hours of deep sleep all every night.
Yeah?
He has the same thing.
Okay. Because he has no worries.
Yeah.
Now, have they checked Australians?
I don't.
Because that's the thing. No worries, Mike. You know, so, how much do they get? You know? They only have deep sleep. They don't even dream. Okay, does that make sense? So that's explaining, the Upanishad is explaining what makes deep sleep deep sleep. There's no other object other than oneself. So therefore, then you just sleep. Consciousness, which is present during deep sleep, does not manifest as an object of perception because of lack of an object. Right? So there's nothing to... one can say nobody can be conscious of himself, but he is consciousness. So the consciousness is there because the soul is consciousness, but there's no object to apply it to. So... The combination which acts as a cause in the form of contact with the senses manifests the consciousness. If consciousness did not exist during deep sleep, it would not manifest later. Just as a unit cannot manifest maleness later on if maleness were not present in him in an unmanifest state. Thus, it is proved that the atomic jiva, the form of consciousness, has consciousness, awareness, as his eternal attribute. Footnote 49. Srila Jiva Goswami explains the non-difference of substance with its quality in comparison to jiva with its consciousness.
we see that Shastra, they use examples like yoni and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and they sound weird for us. Not weird, but they sound kind of unpleasant a little bit. And Shastra does it a lot. But nowadays, it's very unpopular to use those examples. It's because of political correctness and all that?
It's because of material attachment. And material attachment, one of the manifestations is political correctness. In other words, political correctness is, I want to maintain my material desires, so I don't want any kind of experiences or any kind of, you could say, maybe triggers or that's going to create different experiences or transform my experiences. So therefore, whatever I am, that's all the way it's going to be. So technically, those who are politically correct are not willing to actually socially interact with others and therefore have a transformation in their position that possibly to improve it or what they're doing is not so great to change it or like that. It's just what I am, that's it, that's all I can deal with. So therefore, political correctness. Does that make sense? Now, you have to make a distinction between what's politically correct and what's just being cultured. Mm. Right? So being cultured means you say the appropriate things at the appropriate time. That's just proper, you know, training. But political correctness, it's not actually about what is appropriate. It's what they define as appropriate. It's not culturally what's appropriate. It's what I feel should be appropriate. Right? So then, you know, of course you'll get some mix of these. So that's why then we rely on scriptures. Because then scripture, what it gives, it will work. Because otherwise, can you give another example? You know what I'm saying? So it works very nicely. That's why they use these. You can always use them. No matter, whenever that point comes up, no matter what the conversation, you can use these examples. Because they work. There may be some that in a very specific case might work, but that's why they always work, and they always bring it back up. So the thing about political correctness is, what is correct? Is there anything that's actually perfectly politically correct? No, because it changes at every moment. It changes from person to person. It changes from mood to mood. The same person in a slightly different environment. So therefore, it's a cultural thing. But they're trying to make it as a political thing.
As a philosophy.
Yeah, it's a philosophy. What's not understood is they're thinking it's correctness. No, it's political. It's being correct within politics. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So because you could say, no, but you have to take it directly. But that's the whole point about political correctness, is nothing's direct. So, because it is politics, politics sounds bad, so I'll say correctness. Correctness is nice. People like correctness. So I cover the politicalness with correctness, and therefore now it sounds like it's fabulous. So that's the difficulty, is that these examples work perfectly, and if not, you use something else. But the point is that this level of discrimination, you have to be able to appreciate this, because these things are accepted. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was explaining to the devotees about putting together a drama on Lord Chaitanya. So then you're going to have the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. So at the appearance, then a natural part of the, you know, Vedic scene is when a child is born, all the eunuchs show up and they dance. And so then, you know, they create a festive environment. Like that. They sing, they dance, like they play their instruments, and so, and then afterwards, then you give them a nice donation, you feed them, and you know, whatever, and then they go. Right? And so, then, it's just part of the scene. So therefore, in the Indian scene, eunuchs aren't a problem.
It's common.
Huh?
It's common.
Yeah, it's just standard. Yeah, does that make sense? Like nowadays in Calcutta, you know, half of the people that come up and knock on your window when you're stopped at a stoplight are all eunuchs. No? Didn't notice?
Some of them. So they transgenders.
But that's the point. It's just part of the Indian scene. You know, so someone wants to be great, but you don't make a philosophy, you don't go out on marches, you don't do that, you just do it. You know, it's like, I want to eat, you know, chapatis for lunch today, so I have to go out and announce it, and I have to make sure everybody, you know, in the meeting is understanding I'm going to eat chapatis today, and does anybody have any problem with that? You know, like, well, I was going to eat rice today. Why? You have something against chapatis and all that? And like, you know, something, you know, it's just go home and eat chapatis. So that's the whole point, is that there's no need of political correctness because there's culture. And there is an acceptance of all these things. Maybe we won't be a eunuch, you know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that if somebody wants to be one, they can't be. You know? Somebody says, you know, you wouldn't marry your daughter to one like that. But it doesn't mean that others can't be eunuchs. So that's the difficulty, is that the Vedic, they can understand, because they know what's life, they know it's part of life, but especially in the non-Vedic, especially in the you know, contemporary, you could say Western or modern or first world or however is the appropriate way of addressing that particular, demographic or non-demographic, as they would prefer not to be identified. You know, how to identify those who don't want to be identified but want it very clear that they're in the superior position. Like that.
It's official now. That is the third gender.
The third gender.
It's officially Europe.
But it's always been there. He, she, or it. Right? It's always been. The third gender's always been there.
But usually it referred to inanimate or animals.
Oh, that's another thing. But the point is in the Greek culture that they were just very much part of the scene. You know, and somehow or another, like, let's say if a eunuch picked your house, you took care of that eunuch. It was just part of the scene. You know, you have your house, you have your family, you have your kids, you know, you have your eunuch, you have, you know, this, that. It's just, you have all these things.
What did you do with that?
They're there. They live there. I'm not sure exactly if they had some specific duties and all that, but depending upon their nature, they would be part of the scene. But you'd take care. You'd give them a place to stay. Give them food. You know. So you just, it was just a normal thing there. Like that. The Romans, it was, you know, they knew about it, but it wasn't so cool. So if you really wanted to go that direction or that kind of thing, you just went to Greece and you were fine. So many Roman moved to Greece. You know, so it's been there. So now it's this new big thing, the latest, and it's been there for thousands of years. And that's been Greece. And you go back to India, they've always been there. So for millions of years, there's been eunuchs.
So did they put into the drama what Prabhupada explained?
I don't know. He explained it. He was telling how the script could go. So how it actually came up. I've only seen the transcript of Prabhupada describing about it. You know, and then there's birth, and it goes to this, that, and he gave a synopsis of the framework on which to write the drama. So whether they did, I don't know. But it would definitely be fun. You know? Get all the brahmacharis dressed up as girls. They'd all come out. It has some fun. Well, probably they wouldn't want to do it. The grihasthas would do it. Because you know? Then they could really goof on it. You know? You know, it's like when the women, you know, dress up as men, put on a mustache, they really go for it. So the grihasthas, the men, you know, dress up as women, they'll really go for it. So, yeah, you know, really.
Jesus' birthday, they also came.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's that painting of Jesus and everybody comes and these, you know, strange guys are
there. Yeah, yeah. So it's a standard thing.
Why is it considered auspicious?
Yeah. Why is it auspicious?
Because India is considered auspicious when they come for these kind of programs.
Because if you didn't, you'd throw rocks.
Maybe nobody will become like them because they're already there.
I'm not sure. But, you know, exact thing. Auspicious just means that it's part of the scene. They create a nice atmosphere. They come, they sing, they dance, they give blessings. You know, and so then you treat them nicely. They deal very nicely. Mm-hmm. Like that. Like it's just, depending on, you know, begging and things like that, they can be a bit, persistent and all that. But like with sadhus, they never bother them. They're very respectful to sadhus. Like that. Mm. You know, so like that. So they're very, they have their mela every year, and they go and they have their worship and all that. So they're generally considered quite religious,
mm-hmm.
like that. You know, so
it's something inborn. So the person is born like that.
Who knows? That I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't get into that. Because the point is even if you say they're born like that, why are they born like that? Because of the material desire, as we said, from previous lifetime, the mentality is there. Therefore, they're born like that. But it's not that it wasn't a choice, because at some point the soul will go and change into something else. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy identifies as a you know, how you say, what's it, pan-gender. Don't worry, next life you will be. You don't have to worry. Just, you know.
I heard that Michael Jackson, he was a man, then he became a woman, then he became a man. And like that is what he was doing.
And what is that? Oh, and so you're taking the singing and dancing part? Is that the otherwise, I mean, the point is this is the point where it's not about political correctness, it's about culture. It means we don't need to bring it up. Does that make sense? No.
Now every wedding Michael Jackson has to appear.
It's like I'm not sure. It's like he's not around, but in South, I don't know now. But there was a time, I think, back in the 80s, even into the 90s. No, even more recently, even probably within like 10 years ago or something. There's a big dacoit that lives out in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he steals sandalwood.
Beautiful.
Huh?
Virapan.
No.
So,
I'm not sure if he's still around, because he's been
dead.
He's dead long time back.
Yeah. So while he was alive, then depending upon who were super rich people, it was a thing that he would come in. When the couple is there, there's a certain point in the ceremony where he'd come in and give blessings and then disappear. And it was considered a very big thing. You heard of that?
No.
Yeah, some like that. So. You know, I mean, he had probably paid some serious money. But he'd just come in, just blessing like that, maybe eat a little something, chat, and go.
Maybe it's the same in Italy it used to be.
Maybe did the same. Yeah, so like that. So it's all considered auspicious. You know. Everyone becomes inspired. So.
Yeah.
It creates a nice atmosphere, so everyone's happy.
Only two options. Either he kills everybody and gives blessings.
Yes. So the point is, since he paid the money, so he'll give the blessings.
Blessings and sandalwood also.
Oh, sandalwood also. Wow, that's nice. See, even more auspicious. Right? So then in the same way, then you could have Michael Jackson appear at your wedding and then disappear, right? If you were in Vegas, you could find. But most likely Elvis. But Elvis is also cool. Yeah, so then it's just also...
Anything works.
Huh?
Anything that can sing and dance.
Anything that can sing and dance should show up for the...
Back to the previous point you made, that political correctness doesn't allow people to change their view on things.
Yes.
There is already scientific proof to back your words, because some psychiatrists, they run tests, they made... research, and they found out that if they follow the political correctness ethos in their professional work with their patients, then this is the best way to make their patients less resilient and weaker in character. And
it's so the best way to make them weaker in character by becoming politically correct.
Yeah, by following political correctness ethos.
Okay, that's
so
interesting.
It's already proved that what you said.
Yeah, because they just... Everybody... The world has to change, so you don't have to change.
Right.
Like that. So that's the difference between... You understand between political correctness and just culture. Because culture is you behave according to what's the standards, but who sets the standards, then that is the Shastra. But if not, at least then the society is having their regular norms and according to that. But they're not constantly changing. That's what tradition is. You know, it's like you've done that, your parents did that, your grandparents did that. You know, can always say that. Political correct people can't say that. They can't even say that I used to say this. You know? Does this make some sense? Yeah. Okay.
another thing, because you mentioned that you will not marry your daughter to him, but actually now they are transgender men, they are protesting that normal women will not date them. So it's another thing now, they are not happy that there is a discrimination against them, why women don't want to.
Oh, why aren't they complaining that those, what is called it? I can't remember where they're from. Norwegian mastiffs won't date them. You know, there's big monster mastiffs or something like that. You know, there's little ones, but there's these huge monster ones. Yeah. I mean, what is that? What about the zebra, the giraffe, you know? I go by, it doesn't even pay any attention, you know? The camel spit at me, you know? It spits at everybody, you know? No, but the point is that they want somebody with that feminine mood, just find another transgender that dressed as a woman, and then date them. High ball, you know, then everybody's happy.
That's easy.
Huh?
That's easy.
Oh, I see. Okay. And true feminine thing is you have to get what's hard.
What's impossible.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so therefore, they bring these things up. Just like in the Indian scene, you can talk about death, and it's not a problem. But in the Western scene, no one likes to talk about death. Because it's just knowledge, it's there, it exists, so you can deal with it. Is that? Yeah. Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī explains the non-difference of substance with its quality in comparison to Jīva with his consciousness. The qualities of the Jīva are like the warmth of fire. The qualities never leave the Atma as long as the Atma exists over all time with no beginning and no end. The Śrūti shows this. Nahi vigyātur vigyāter vipāri lopo vidyate. Knowledge never leaves the Atma. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:3:30. Pumstva divat tasya sato bhi vyakti yogat. You cannot say that the jiva's knowledge is not eternal, because it exists during deep sleep and simply manifests on awakening. It is like maleness, which is unmanifest in a child but appears when it grows up. Brahma Sutra 2:3:29. Jiva's qualities, which are similar to the Lord's, are hidden. From meditation on the Supreme Lord, a Shakti, which defies darkness, appears by the mercy of the Lord, like the power of a medicine. Balam anandam ojascha saho jnanam anakulam sarupyanyeva jivasya vyajyante paramad viboho. The strength of the body, bliss, vigor of senses and mind, consistent knowledge, and surups of the jivas arise from the Supreme Lord. Go Pavana Shruti. Ah, cool. Yeah, there's so many scriptures. I think there's a huge amount of what they're quoting you can't even find these days. Yeah. But they were available then.
It's one of the complaints against Madhvacharya, because many things that he quotes from scriptures, nobody knows what are those scriptures.
They're there, yeah. So strength of the body, bliss, vigor, senses and mind, consistent knowledge and surups of the jiva, that comes from the Lord. So all that's the Lord, the jiva is not independent. If it were not a matter of these qualities manifesting or not manifesting in the jiva, one would either perceive the qualities at all times, being eternally manifested, or not perceive them at all, not being present at all in the jiva. This is the case of material objects which have no consciousness, right? They're either all one thing or all another. You don't see two things. The jiva did not have these qualities inherent in its swarup, there would be no tendency to manifest them. Thus, the jiva is anu by nature, but pervades the body by his qualities. Right? Because the Lord, then he's the body, he's the vigor, he's the senses and mind, something like that. That's why he can pervade. Right? Ramanuja explains it in this way. Just as a fire object remains with a glowing form, So the consciousness remains with its conscious form. Even if the effulgence arises as a quality of a substance, it is also the fiery substance, not merely a quality like whiteness. Right? So the coal is there, there's no flame. But then it can come up and you can see the flame, or it can go back to being a coal.
Right. Can we say in this logic, for example, as a conditioned soul, we actually have all the varieties of qualities, both good and bad, but we manifest according to what's inherent in us, specifically in this lifetime? Can we stretch it that far?
I wouldn't, because you'll have... Means we're talking about two things here. The soul, in its constitutional position, what are the qualities that it inherently has?
Okay.
Right? Then what can be developed. So the 50 qualities that are there, those are the qualities that souls have. Now, to what degree and all that, you'll have some the generic aspects will be there that you'll always be able to see in souls. But then what specifically will be there, then we're looking at, you know, in the spiritual world, be according to their relationship with Krishna. So what qualities match that? In the material world, being covered, then it's according to your karma, then what qualities are there. So the material qualities aren't inherent in the soul. Like that. Those are coverings. But they're not the standard coverings. Does that make sense? Yeah. It is the substance, since it takes shelter of itself. It can be present elsewhere. It has a form, and it reveals things. This is the difference from whiteness. The ability to reveal things means its natural ability to reveal other things. Effulgence is sometimes classed as its quality because it always takes shelter of the substance and depends on it. It can never be said that the object with its parts is depleted when it spreads its effulgence, since one would see the gems and the sun disappear after radiating effulgence. Just as a lamp is termed the source of qualities, since it has unfailing qualities like effulgence, so the jiva is the source of qualities, since it is endowed with unfailing qualities. Though the jiva is anu, it pervades by its qualities. That quality of consciousness is unbroken. But by the shakti called avidya karma, the consciousness contracts or expands, right? So avidya karma. So if you put more avidya, it becomes more covered. You lessen the avidya, then it becomes more uncovered. So the soul in the mode of goodness, then there's more uncovered. The soul in the mode of ignorance is like that. So then those with the covered consciousness, you hardly see anything. Those in retracted, you see something. Right, so only those in the, what's the next?
Budding.
Budding, right? So budding, then you'll see, can I say? Then you'll start to see properly. You know, but as it goes up, so only in the end state, in prema, then you see the natural nature in full. So that's in Paramatmasandarbha. Bhagavatam verse reference. The living entity can vividly feel his existence as the seer, but because of the disappearance of the ego during the state of deep sleep, he falsely takes himself to be lost, like a man who has lost his fortune and feels distress, thinking himself to be lost. Right? So he's not there. There's no identity with these. There's only yourself. So if you're going to have an identity, it's your identity with something. Because there's no meaning to an identity if there's not something else there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, since there's no object to apply the identity towards, then there's no identity, so there's nothing. Huh? And then when you wake up, then again it comes. Yes.
So, means that identity exists in relationship to other things?
Yes. Because I'm the controller and enjoyer, but I'm the controller and enjoyer of other things. Because if I was the controller and enjoyer of being the soul, then I'd be Atmarama. You know? So it's always something else. It's just like, let's say, as an example, political correct or not, is you have the element of machismo. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, if there's no one there, no one around, no mirrors, no nothing, can you be machissimo? No, it's only because there's other people around, especially if there's ladies. Right? If there's guys around, you can talk about being machissimo, but if there's ladies around, then you can try to be machissimo. So that's the whole point, is their identity is dependent upon the women, though they're trying to present that they're the ones independent in this and they're the big guy, but if the women aren't there, they can't be machissimo. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is relationship means it's dependent. Identity means it's dependent. You know, if I'm the best, that means I'm dependent on everybody else being less than that, or at least being perceived that way. But on your own, it's just you sitting there. Then where's the I am the greatest come in? You know. So that's the whole point. So that's why then, if you're in control, you don't want to bring in God, because he's obviously, you know, bigger. So then your position automatically goes down. You know, so when the sun comes up, the stars, then you don't notice. So that's the point. So
Maharaj, and these impersonalists, they are situated in the impersonal Brahman, you know, as Anu. So then, what exactly? Because now they do not have any other objects over there other than themselves. So then what is their identity then in that sense?
There is no identity. Means what are you calling it? Brahmavadis or impersonal?
The Brahmavadis.
The Brahmavadis, I am Brahman.
That's
so they're Brahman, and everything else is Brahman, so they have a relationship with Brahman. So they don't have a problem. That's why they don't bump into trees. Because if you're a bona fide Mayavadi, there is no tree. So keep walking. There is no cliff. Right, it's illusion. But before you go, keep walking, please first give me your wallet, which doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? So they're Brahman, and everything else is Brahman. So it's not a problem that there's not individuality and this and that, it's just it's all Brahman. So they're only seeing that Brahman level. You know, and they can be non-devotees. They can be devotees, that means then they're in the Shantaras. So it's that they see Krishna, the person, but they specifically appreciate him through his Brahman feature. That's what makes it Shanta. That's why there's no interaction. There's no service. It means they remember the Lord in that, but there's no sense of possession because everything's Brahman, and they're Brahman like this, but it's all, so, you know, in a sense, so it's dual thing.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, where did we get?
No,
this next one has a footnote, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premanand.